Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hello, everyone. This is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. We are now in the last chapter of St. Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 4, and he's going to tie things up, but there's still a lot of lessons he wants to teach in this as well. So let's open up our Bible to Philippians chapter 4, and we'll just read the first few verses together, really to the end of verse 9. St. Paul writes, "Therefore, my brethren, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in this way in the Lord, my beloved." Now that first verse there was really the last verse in the major section that we just ended in the last episode. So in chapter 4, verse 2, he's going to start off a new topic, kind of tie up some loose ends, deal with some stuff. But also, as I said, we'll impart a lot of wisdom along the way. Let's look at verse 2 of chapter 4. Paul writes, "I entreat Yodia and Syntyche to agree in the Lord. And I also ask you, who are a true co-worker, help these women. For they have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let all men know your forbearance. The Lord is at hand. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace will be with you." Okay, so lots to unpack there. Let's get going with it. Now, these two women that Paul mentions in verses 2 and 3, when he says, "I entreat Yodia and Syntyche to agree in the Lord," who are these ladies? We don't really know. Some people think that there was a private kind of disagreement, a fight that was going on between these two ladies. They didn't get along with each other. Hard to say. Or it might be a group of people that were kind of lining up, but sort of behind each one of them. They're kind of maybe representing two factions within this church community. Whatever the case may be, Paul wants them to patch things up. Unity is the name of the game. And then, this is a really strange verse, and nobody can really make too much sense of this one. In verse 3, Paul writes, "I also ask you, who are a true co-worker, help these women, for they have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life." Now, when Paul says, "I also ask you, who are a true co-worker," that's an individual. And again, there's been tons of speculation as to who this person might be. We don't really know. But the word can be translated as, when he says that you're a true co-worker, it could be translated as a true yoke mate. Now, the yoke's on you, and I'm not talking about an egg yolk. I'm talking about a yoke that an oxen would wear. And in the Gospels, Jesus says, "My yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Now, who knows? As a tecton, that meant more than just being a carpenter. The kind of work that Jesus did, that was the Greek word that describes it. He may have been well-versed in all kinds of things, as with St. Joseph. Really, some people think that they were perhaps a combination of construction worker, architect, engineer, kind of a multifaceted employment, this job of being a tecton, is much more than carpentry. But it's possible that Jesus would have made these farm implements, these yokes. And this is what the oxen would wear on their back, and it would enable them to drag the plow as they're trying to fertilize the field. They would drag the plow, make a furrow, and the farmer would follow behind, seeding that field. And so it's really an image of work. And Jesus says, my yoke is easy. In other words, it's made just for you. If the yoke is not suited to the animal, if the yoke is not custom made for the animal, it's going to chafe. It's going to maybe cut into the animal's flesh. And so the demands of the gospel are tailor-made for us because God created humanity in his image, and he knows exactly how things should work. So these commands of God, these laws of Jesus Christ, are not burdensome. In fact, they give us life. They make things easier for us when we try to live them out. And the other thing that's kind of intriguing about this verse, when St. Paul says, I ask you who are a true co-worker, and again, in the original Greek, it could mean yoke mate. That has led some people to speculate that perhaps St. Paul might be talking about his wife. Now, what was St. Paul even married? Some people think he was. Now, what are they basing that on? One of the things is this verse, yoke mate. Now, in the original Greek, the word is syzygos. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that quite right, but that sometimes means spouse. So some people are saying, aha, Paul was married after all. He's actually writing to his wife here in this particular verse. Now, of course, the letter to the Philippians is for the whole church, but this idea that, oh, I ask you also, who are my true co-worker or my true yoke mate, my true spouse, perhaps? I don't necessarily think so. However, elsewhere in his writings, Paul does use this term. The image of the yoke, which Jesus used in the Gospels. Now, this is what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 6:14, when he writes, do not be yoked together with unbelievers, for what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? Now, this idea of being yoked together with unbelievers, that could mean just be in close working contact with unbelievers. That could obviously refer to marriage, this idea of being tightly bound together with somebody. You're supposed to be kind of pointing in the same direction, like two oxen were often yoked together. And if one of them was stronger than the other, or if one of them wanted to pull off in a different direction, the work is not going to get done. The plow is not going to cut through the furrow. In fact, disaster could really take place. And so you've got to be on the same page, Paul says, when it comes to these really close relationships, perhaps like marriage. Maybe you might want to think about marrying somebody who has the same values, the same mindset as you. But that is not necessarily what's going on here in Philippians chapter 4. I don't think this means that Paul was married at all, because number one, it's a very obscure reference if that was the case. And there are other times in the New Testament where Paul seems to indicate that he is in fact celibate for the sake of the kingdom. The most famous passage in that regard is 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Now, the whole chapter is quite interesting, but in chapter 7, verse 7 of 1 Corinthians, he says, I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own special gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. Now, that was in the whole context of speaking of marriage, and he seems to indicate that, hey, I have the gift of celibacy, and I'm actually enjoying it. This is great. For me, I wish everybody was like this, because it's my gift, therefore I think it's the greatest thing. But some are called, some are given another gift, and that is the gift of the vocation of marriage. And he refers to that elsewhere in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5. And we did a whole series on Corinthians in the Faith Explained series, which you can look up through the archives at relevantradio.com. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5, he says, do we not have the right to be accompanied by a wife as the other apostles and the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Now, he's referring to Peter there. Cephas, that's his Aramaic name, which means rock. That doesn't mean that Paul had a wife. He just says that they had the right to have a wife. Now, we do know that some of the apostles were married. In fact, the Gospel of Mark speaks of Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law. She was in bed with a fever. Jesus touched her by the hand. She got up, and she was fine. And some say that that is why Peter denied the Lord later on. He was still mad that Jesus healed his mother-in-law. Now, that's an old joke. That's an old preacher's joke. That's not the case at all. But just because Paul acknowledges this right, that doesn't mean that he himself did have a wife. Now, who knows? Maybe at some point in his life, he did. Before all of this happened, his connection with Jesus, his conversion, his apostolic ministry, we don't know whether at some point in his past life, can't say with absolute 100% certainty that Paul was never married. Maybe he was in the past and his wife passed away. Just as we don't know whether Peter's wife was still living when he was doing some of his apostolic ministry, or perhaps she had died, had passed away earlier. But we do know, it seems to me, that Paul, while he is an apostle of Jesus Christ, is not married, does not have a wife, and in fact is embracing apostolic celibacy, may have been celibate the entire time. But it's a bit of a sidebar issue, but when it comes to that verse, you might have read about this, people do ask that question. But this idea of being a co-worker with Paul, that's whoever this person was, he holds this person in high regard because they're co-workers with him in sharing the gospel. And so one of the things that he says to this person, whoever it may be in verse 3, is help these women, for they have labored side by side with me in the gospel together with Clement. Now, who's Clement? That may be Pope Clement, one of the early popes of Rome. Linus, Cletus, Clement, Sixtus, Cornelius, right? We all know the list of the early popes from the first Eucharistic prayer, the Roman canon. And then Paul mentions the rest of his fellow workers whose names are in the Book of Life. Now, the Book of Life is a very, very interesting phrase. And I think I want to take a minute just to talk about this because this is all over the Bible, Old and New Testament. There are many, many references to this. For example, in the book of Exodus, chapter 32, verses 32 and 33, it says, "But now, if you will forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I beg you, out of your book which you have written. But the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, him I will blot out of my book. But now go, lead the people to the place of which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them." And the Lord sent a plague upon the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. So Moses is pleading with God, hey, the golden calf incident, that was terrible, idolatry, they've gone back to the false gods of Egypt, but hey, can you destroy me instead? You know, blot me out of the book of life, not them. And very much this is similar to something that St. Paul himself says in his letter to the Romans when he says, I wish I would rather be separated from God from all eternity than have any of my brethren, according to the flesh, the Jews, be separated from God for all eternity. I'll take the fall on their behalf. Very much the same attitude as St. Paul. But what is this book of life? Well, the book of life, anybody whose name is written in the book of life is going to be saved, is going to heaven in the end. We could also look at Psalm 69, verse 28, where it says, "Let them be blotted out of the book of the living. Let them not be enrolled among the righteous." We could also look at another famous verse that we've dealt with here on the Faith Explained program in our series on the book of Daniel, the very famous Daniel chapter 12. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, it talks about the future resurrection at the end of days. It says, "At that time shall arise Michael." Now, who's Michael? That's, of course, St. Michael the Archangel. "At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never has been since there was a nation until that time. But at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book." Beautiful. The book of life. There it is once again. It appears in Daniel. Also, of course, it's all over the book of Revelation. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 5, he who conquers, this is Jesus speaking, he who conquers shall be clothed like them in white garments, and I will not blot his name out of the book of life. I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. That's incredible. Can you imagine Jesus speaking your name in front of God the Father and all the holy angels? Hey, this person belongs to me. He's with me. She's with me. Name is in the book of life. Revelation chapter 13, verse 8. All who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life. The book of life of the Lamb that was slain. Revelation 20:12, it says, I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Also another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged by what was written in the books, by what they had done. So, talk about some heavenly bookkeeping. It's not that we can earn our way into heaven by our deeds. This isn't some sort of a ledger of debits and credits. No, no, no. We have to accept the grace of God. Now, we partner with him from that point on. This is the process of sanctification. He works within us to accomplish good deeds. But we see several books there. The book of life, who's getting in at the end of the day? Who's on the ledger, the heavenly membership role? And then, of course, there's our deeds, which follow after us for good or for ill. And then in Revelation 20:15, if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. And of course, that is the second death. We don't want that. We don't want to have anything to do with that. So that's why we really need to heed the words that St. Paul is saying here in his letter to the Philippians. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So at the end of the day, this is one of the things that we can do. Help the apostles, and of course the modern day apostles are the bishops who of course are successors of the apostles. And we're all apostles. We share in this office of priest, prophet, and king through our own baptism. What does a prophet do? Announce the truth of God. So we've got to be, in a sense, co-workers with Paul, even 20 centuries later, and labor side by side with him, because we have the same mission of sharing the gospel. That's what he says. They have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Really powerful stuff. And now he says in verse 4, to rejoice. And this is a command. This is an imperative. He kind of switches gears here. Let's read verse 4. St. Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let all know your forbearance. Let all people know your forbearance or your gentleness. The Lord is at hand. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Boy, that sounds like a great deal to me. We give God our anxieties, and he gives us back his peace that passes all understanding. I'll take that deal. I'll take that deal. Well, let's get into that in a minute. But first, Paul commands his readers to rejoice. And again, this is the touchstone of the letter. St. Paul is in a Roman prison. He's chained under house arrest to one of the imperial guards, Caesar's household. He's there. He's stuck. But inside, he is free. The word of God, as he says, is not chained. I may be enchained, as he says in another place, but the word of God is unchained. It's free. And I'm free on the inside. And I have joy. And joy does not depend on what's happening. That's just pure human happiness. Happiness depends on what's happening, but joy is something down deep that no one can ever take away from you. This is the supernatural joy of Christ. It's joy in the Lord. So again, he commands it. This is an imperative command here. Rejoice. It's a command. Well, how can you do that? How can you command other people to rejoice? Dennis Hamm has a little section on this in his commentary on Philippians. How can you exhort others to rejoice? Is this kind of being like a director of fun on a cruise ship? Okay, people, it's time to get happy. No, I mean, it's not that simple. And it's not a facile, surfacey type joy. No, no. This is joy even when you don't feel good because of what's happening physically. This may be you're in prison. Paul went through a litany of sufferings on behalf of sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. But Paul can tell people, he can mandate this, he can command this, that you be in that joyful frame of mind, because it's not a feeling. It's not depending on what's happening. It's not depending on how you feel at the moment. You might not feel joyful or happy, but you make a choice. And you can do that. You can do that in Jesus Christ. And so the sort of clue to this is this relationship between the two women that he mentions in verse 2, Yodia and Syntyche. Hey, you might not personally like each other, but you can make a choice to love one another, to be on the same page, to be kind. That's why he says in verse 5, let everyone know your forbearance, your kindness. That is not the kind of thing where you're asserting your rights. And I want things to be done my way. You know, like that old Frank Sinatra song. That's a song that they sing, by the way, in the caverns of hell. I did it my way. And hey, well, this is where you end up. The door to hell is locked from the inside. You got to do it God's way. Got to do it God's way. And the Greek lexicon describes this Greek word for kindness. This is what the definition of it is. Not insisting on every right or letter or law or custom. Yielding, gentle, kind, courteous, tolerant. It's actually pretty rare, according to Dennis Hamm. It's a rare Greek word. Rare but necessary for these two women, Yodia and Syntyche, in order to get on the same page. And everybody around them, everybody in the church, needs to do that as well. So, St. Jose Maria used to say that sometimes the greatest mortification is not, you know, being crucified in the public square. It's a smile for those who annoy you, for those that you maybe don't naturally get along with. And there are plenty of those people in our lives. Another time he said, you are not a dollar bill to be liked by everyone. We all love it when we find maybe a coin or a dollar bill on the sidewalk. Hey, it's free. This is great. But sometimes when people meet us, they're not that excited. Maybe it's because they know that we're Catholics. Maybe they have some misconceptions about what the faith is all about. Maybe they think we're some strange individual like the Ned Flanders character on The Simpsons, that weird religious guy next door. No, no, no. St. Paul says your kindness should be known to all. And so that's solid. That's solid interior mortification, to smile at those who annoy us, to try to love them, try to work with them. Really, as one writer said, what St. Paul gave the Philippians in this letter was a joy transfusion. You know, people get blood transfusions, they need it. Wow, they have so much more energy, so much more life after that. They can keep going. Well, these guys needed a joy transfusion, and that's what they got. They loved Paul, and they probably appreciated this gift of joy that he gave them. Remember, he reminded them that they could choose joy. And there are a lot of things in life that can take our joy away, that can steal our joy. Oftentimes, we have no control over these things, but we can still choose joy in Jesus Christ. There are those sneaky thoughts that pop up. Maybe something from your past, you're reminded of that, and that's demoralizing, even though you've given it to God. The past you've consigned to His mercy, you've gone to confession. But those thoughts creep in. Oh, maybe it's not really over and done with and fully forgiven. Well, it is. Or maybe you're afraid of the future, some frightening incident that might happen. Our imaginations can get carried away and come up with all kinds of things. Got to remember, the future is in God's hands too, just like the past. His providence. He's going to give you the grace when you get there. But if you really want to keep your joy, you've got to stay in the present moment. That's the gift, the present, right? This is where God's going to give you his joy. A writer named Helen Malicote wrote this. She said, quote, "I was regretting the past and fearing the future, but suddenly my Lord was speaking. My name is I Am." He paused. I waited. He continued, "When you live in the past with its mistakes and regrets, it is hard. I am not there. My name is not I Was. When you live in the future with its problems and fears, it is hard. I am not there either. My name is not I Will Be. When you live in this moment, it is not hard. I am here. My name is I Am." That is it. That's a beautiful little writing. And I think that's true. And obviously, this is the name of God as revealed to Moses at the burning bush in Exodus chapter 3. I Am. I am who I am. I am that I am. Yahweh, this mysterious name of God. And so God is here with us in the present moment, whatever our circumstances might be. And again, Paul's weren't great, humanly speaking, but he had that joy and he had the audacity and even the duty to command the Philippians to be joyful as well. We got to leave it there for now. We've run out of time. You've been listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. We're going to finish up our study of the letter to the Philippians very, very soon. If there are things that you'd like us to cover, biblical books that you've always wondered about, maybe some passages or things in the catechism that have always made you scratch your head, let me know and maybe we can talk about it on the show. You can email the program faith, F-A-I-T-H, at relevantradio.com. And be sure to share the podcast with others. You can share it through relevantradio.com, through our app, or wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. We try to be everywhere. And believe me, if St. Paul was here today, he'd be doing the same thing to share the good word of the sacred scriptures. And tell us about salvation and joy in Jesus Christ. Until next time, I'm your host, Cale Clark. You've been listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. God bless you.
You know, having that peace, that's going to be absolute confirmation that you have been following God's will, that you understood where God was calling you, you accepted that, you acted on it, and God will give you that peace.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, we kind of buy into things that we think are going to give us peace or joy or happiness. Paul talks about it in Colossians 2, 6 to 10. He's saying, no, be rooted in love, walk in him. See to it that no one captivates you with empty philosophy. So we could be what a friend had once called self-propelled Christians. So without God's love, it's almost like we're Fred Flintstone.
I guess it's kind of relaxing to know I'm at the wheel. Relaxing nothing. It's terrifying.
We're trying to push ourselves. God's like, you're being the protagonist. He says, let me do it. And when we do, you know, that peace is actually going to start to come up within us.
The Inner Life with Josh Raymond.
11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.